I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
What's up, Sword Art Online fans? Alice Zation, War of Underworld. We're talking episode 11, Heartless Choice, and we have a very special guest. We got Sharmi Lee. Woo!
Hello!
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me digitally, but, you know, still.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be my first experience. I've obviously done a couple AfterBuzz episodes, and it's been delightful. But this will be a fun virtual experiment.
Yeah, well, it's very appropriate for the show, you know.
Yes, no, it's very true. Of course.
So we have a live chat going. Make sure to put in your questions, and we're going to go into the show and leave comments down below as well when this is all done. So the episode starts off, we get a really kind of interesting flashback with Bercoli and the Pontifex kind of having a heart to heart. I was like, oh, okay.
Same.
I was like, well, wait a minute.
This is fun.
Yeah. I was like, wait, did they? No, they're just talking.
Same. I was like, wait, okay. What happened before this that I missed? And then because I didn't get to see every episode from last season. So I was wondering, did I miss a very important episode that would explain their relationship? Or did this just kind of come out of nowhere? So I'm glad I wasn't the only one who had that thought.
Yeah, we'll have to ask the uncle. We'll have to ask Imari what was going on there.
Yeah, what's the backstory, man? What's your actor's secret?
Yes, but their conversation has a really kind of interesting moment of, have you had a fear of dying? And it's interesting hearing these essentially artificial, but technically real souls concerned about dying, and it's more because of that unknown entity, that X factor, which I would say is Asana coming into the picture.
Just, you know.
To change things up.
Wrestling things up a bit like she does.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. Then we get our, it kind of then jumps back to the present. We get Ronnie A beating Kirito. And okay, what did you think of this scene from last week into this one? I'm like, okay, it's the Kirito harem. What is going on here?
People have asked me and Bryce at conventions, they're like, first of all, Sharmi, does it bother you? Second of all, Bryce, who's your favorite? And Bryce always says, well, I'm not going to pick a favorite. And then he's like, no, obviously it's Asuna. And so I think for her, she's like so confident in their relationship. And I've always seen it in the way Alex has directed it. He's like, there's so much loyalty and so much confidence in the relationship between the two of them that she's like, these are super cool, fierce women that I want to hang out with that are a lot like me. And I'm just getting more friends out of this situation. I have nothing to worry about with my boyfriend. They might have a crush on him, but it's not a mutual thing. So sort of a funny situation. And I understand it's an anime trope, and it is definitely a hot button. The fan base always likes to remind me that there's some other really strong warrior women in the show. And the more powerful women, the better. They all have a different vibe to them, and I'm never going to shut that down. But I'm not concerned about Kirito's relationship with Asuna at all.
Yeah, I think I also feel within the episode, she kind of discovers that all these women, it's not the same as her relationship.
Of course.
And that kind of eases her fears. Like, you can't be jealous of Ronnie. It's just like, he's so innocent and pure.
Well, and some of them view him as a mentor. Some of them view him more like a brother. Some of them is just a friend that they've helped them through a traumatic situation. And I'm sure there's an element of, well, maybe this could evolve into a crush situation. But then, I mean, as they, not to jump ahead, but as they say later on in the show, it's only been 10 days. So for Alice, it's like, this is 10 days for them. It feels so much longer because of the time disparity between the two worlds. But in all actuality, it's been a 10 day jump. And I don't think that she's got to worry about somebody who's known him for 10 days,
you know? So, but I did, what, how was that filming? We'll do a little bit of a throwback here. How was that recording the scenes with Alice of kind of the like one up in each other of like, Oh yeah. It was how do you know him? Weird.
It was so weird. And because I have never felt any sort of insecurity and never felt that Austin had felt any insecurity, that was a very hard scene to nail. And Alex Von David, the director, will tell you we did that scene so many times. And I, as an actor, was getting insecure that we were doing it so many times. I'm like, gosh, have I not played Austina for so long that I just don't know who she is anymore? And he said, no, this is kind of out of left field. This is a new element that we haven't seen her in. So we had to really find the balance of she is trying to let everybody know who she is and where she comes from, because they don't know who she is. They're questioning whether she's a goddess, if she's human, what her world is. So she's like starting from scratch, and she's trying to sort of assert her place in this new world and how she knows Kirito and why she wants to be able to see him, because they're guarding the door. And I mean, I would say if somebody was guarding the door to my husband, who I hadn't seen in 10 days, I would be like, no, I would like to go in there. And that's where it comes from of, you don't know how much I know about him and how much I care about him, and please step aside. It's nothing personal, but for us, it's something very personal. But then also we wanted to get that comedic moment of the two girls like leveling up and figuring out who was going to come out on top. So it was a fine, subtle balance that Alex worked with me to strike, so that it didn't feel like we had completely abandoned who Austina was. But at the same time, we wanted to get a little bit of that humor, because this show is just so heavy sometimes.
Yeah, it was very comedic, and it made me roll my eyes a little bit. I'm like, girl, you're acting like children right now. Calm down.
Yeah, I was watching it and doing a live stream on Twitter, and I was like, you're both pretty and you're both so strong. Yeah. I mean, really just team up together and like annihilate everybody. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. We have quite a few people in the chat. We had Chandler, Ingram, Alan Gamino, and then we also have, where'd it go? Natsu Dragoneel. They're all kind of commenting on that moment when Austina and Kirito first get that embrace and connection after they've been apart. How was that scene to film?
I mean, I cried when I first watched it. And then just because it's been a while for me to record, and so getting to come back. And then here, Bryce was already in. He'd already recorded, luckily. So just hearing how weak and broken Kirito sounded, and Bryce and I have been friends for so long. Just hearing a friend of yours in that sort of place is really hard. So it was not difficult for me as an actor to be able to go there, just because the animation is so beautifully done, and obviously anybody who's seen the show knows the history of their relationship. And so, it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking to rewatch, and it was definitely heartbreaking to record. So I guess that was necessary.
But then that's good, because you felt something, and that scene totally is supposed to make the viewer feel something, for sure. Where was it? Yes. Oh, Julian Fishman says, I knew Austina would reveal everything about the real world. How was that line delivery and your own thought process? I thought it was kind of comedic that Austina is like, oh yeah, so this isn't the real world. This is a fake thing. I'm just going to tell you.
Yeah, lay it all out there. I mean, with Alex, when we were working on it, there's so much exposition that has to happen from a story perspective. And so as an actor, it's and for a writer as well, it's very difficult when you have to get all that exposition out very quickly so that the story can move forward. But at the same time, you always hate being the person who has to deliver all of that exposition. And the other trick is to not make it seem like in a condescending way of everything you know is wrong and everything I know is right. And so I think so much of that, Alex was very meticulous. It's so nice when your director is also the writer and adapts the scripts. So he knows the material backwards and forwards. and he has a cinematic background, which I love. So he's always great about making the dialogue seem as natural as possible. And he said, please make this seem as kind, but also firm, because the love of your life is in a very critical situation, and time is of the essence, and you don't have time to waste. And they are so concerned with their reality, which is just a small fraction of what's really going on in the grand scheme of things. And he said, so while you don't want to say, hey guys, let's get it together, we have to get it together. So it was another fine line that we had to walk. But of course, we would just keep going back to, well, what's driving every moment for her? Saving Kirito. And she doesn't have enough time, and she can only use these powers so many times before she gets locked out of the system. So the stakes are pretty high.
I was going to say, semi pun intended, with our high stakes, we have the enemy going across the chasm that she made and with the ropes.
Yeah.
And I actually, Iskan, I feel for him in these scenes. I felt bad for him because
how
he's not okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good leader. I mean, he's concerned about his people. But yeah, and what a tough situation it must be in. It must be to have to follow orders while also trying to protect people when you know you're basically sending them on a suicide mission and there's nothing that you can do. Since I hadn't seen all of episode 11 until I watched it last night, seeing his side of things definitely informed the relationship that I had seen with him and what we've recorded in, spoiler alert, in the next episode. And so it definitely informed my perspective of him, and gave me a lot more respect for what he's dealing with and what a nuanced character he is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And shout out to Koi, who came on preview episode. Great job.
He's amazing.
Character.
Amazing.
And it's interesting because technically you could say they're the bad guy on the bad guy's side, but him caring about his people just kind of dying for no purpose.
Yeah.
Gives depth to that character, which is great. And then the Integrity Knights, when they roll in, you go, yay, but oh no.
You're like, oh, they're here. Oh, you guys are in so much trouble.
Yeah. They're like, oh, there's only a few of them. It's okay. And you're like,
No.
When they come in and just destroy the pugilists, it's like, oh.
Yeah, so much blood. And you are, obviously, you want the good guys to win. But after we've seen, they've been humanized by what we've seen of his perspective, then you kind of go, man, war is brutal and there are no winners. Yep. It's terrible.
I think that's pretty much what he said too. He said something like, is this what war really is? And Alice has said that too. I think it's great commentary on everybody loses.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Then we have Vecta is watching this and notices that the human AIs are smarter and leads into the awful thing that Critter's doing on the outside. One, syncing the real world time to underworld time, which I'm like, okay, well, maybe that's a good thing, possibly, don't really know. But opening up the essentially beta test to the American players. And okay, semi-joke though, in the sub, the American voices when they're doing, the English was so cheesy. I just had to say that. So I really like that moment in the dub because they sounded like normal people.
Yeah.
But it was comedic watching the Americans in the Japanese language version of it. You're like, oh.
I know. I was like, man, what are the, because I glanced down and I was like, what are they actually saying on the screen? And then I was like, oh no, they're reading it verbatim. What's on the screen? This is hilarious.
Yeah.
But of course, when Alex was explaining to me as we were working on this, what was going on with the American players, he's like, so of course they're going to the American players. I was like, oh, okay. of course it's the Americans that are going to like make everybody's lives miserable. Thanks a lot.
Yay.
You know. But they didn't know. They didn't do it on purpose.
Yeah, no, they don't know what's going on. They just think, oh, they just think it's a beta. It's fine.
Yeah, let's jump in.
Yeah, the I'm just looking in the chat. Yeah, thank you everybody who is watching this live.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to see. Natsu commented the Asma, Bacrolli, Alice, and them working together to fight against pugilist warriors from crossing the cliff. I was going to say, I don't think you had any lines then, because Asma, you just see her. Yeah, they're just destroying everybody. Oathkeeper says, although Asana's on horseback, awesome, but poor pugs. Chandler says, knights going in like butchers. Sort of,
You know.
Yeah. Also, Oathkeeper mentions, I think referring to the English, says, biggest oof, but could be worse. I'm like, I mean, I've seen it on other foreign films when they're dubbing English and it's comedic.
Sure.
One of those moments. But then we get back to, it's one of those you sometimes forget that the characters are Japanese, and then you're like, oh yeah, because then we meet, or call back to, we get Sinon and Lifa, and when they go to Wrath, because Yui helps get them to a Wrath building, and they're like,
such a rock star.
Hi, we have a couple teenage girls here. They just are some students.
So like, oh, they're like, not just some students, just wait.
No, not at all. So I thought that was great. And yeah, we get the call to Higa and Kikuoka, and they're like, excuse me, you should be checking the FLA rate. And I love when they look and they're like, oh no,
what, how did this happen? And then of course he goes, oh my gosh, what's going on? You did it, dude, come on.
Yeah. And then the idea that their names are fake names. It's like, oh no, they'll know who they are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was such a great moment to get to see everybody come back. I feel like that's so much of what this episode was. It's like, let's assemble the troops.
Which it was definitely squad so goals fun. Moment.
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
And then we get, 8-Bit Nate says, I'm glad to see Yui doing more this season. Yeah, no,
I agree. Mm-hmm. It was a great, great moment for Yui. Just kind of being absolute squad leader, getting everybody together and making everything happen.
I like this one. Mega Daffy in the chat says, squad roll out. Yes.
Totally.
I like all of them coming together and they kind of are powwowing of like, okay, well, what are we going to do? And then they get this great emotional speech. And I kind of also was like, well, yeah, what is the point? Like, why is Alice so important? But Alice essentially proves that the VR worlds are real and that all the experiences everyone had, essentially that would all be for nothing if she's destroyed.
Right.
And then it's the pretty much turns out that that's the true purpose of the seed package. And you're like, oh my gosh, like all of this coming together.
Yeah.
Loved that Alice kind of pixelated, you know, image.
Oh,
collage.
It was so beautiful.
Beautiful.
It was so beautiful. And I
hope
we
see
I loved the unifier of like, she's not just another character. She is a figure that represents everything, every experience, every bit of growth that all of these characters and all these players have had that they might not experience in the quote unquote real world that they experience in the virtual world. And I'm like, why is this not the poster for the season? Like everybody's little bitty face picking up Alice. That would be so, so beautiful.
I was going to say, when we start having cons again, I hope to see some of the people doing that image in Artist Alley. Be like,
that would be so cool.
So pretty.
It's so pretty.
Somebody scrolling back here. Gundam Force says, great to see the entire harem back in action after being sidelined for so long.
Right? We had to wait. We had to let the story get into place.
There's a couple boys in that group too. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah. very, very instrumental, which yes. It was so fun getting to see everybody and hear everybody again. I was like, aw, it's throwback time. Yeah. The gang's all here.
So then they go and they're going to, they make a hard point or difficult. They share here are our problems. One, the time difference. It's 4:30 mm-hmm. in the morning here in Japan. It's noon in the U.S. and like mid-afternoon. And I was like, oh, yeah, anybody who's ever gamed, that is an issue of like, where totally. People playing. And then also they can't just say, hey, don't do this because these are military secrets. So this could become a bigger problem.
Yep.
So it's nice absolutely. To cover those bases of, well, why don't they just tell everybody like, don't do this. And you're like, oh, right. That's why. So then they go, okay, well, how are we going to do this? And then he goes, well, you can convert your accounts. There's just a few strings attached.
There's like a lot of major strings. They're not like even bit. Baby strings, just like life altering, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, actually life altering. Sure.
You know, maybe it's one of those things of like, how much are you willing to risk to totally. Help out Kirito and everybody else? They get the big scene where it's the trying to recruit everyone, and huge shout out Sarah Ann Williams. Great job on that speech.
So, Oh my gosh. Oh. I watched that speech and
you're like,
no kidding. Her delivery was beautiful. Alex's adaptation was beautiful. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was fantastic. I think I saw a comment last night when I was watching the episode. Someone said, so Sarah was phenomenal with her speech. But where is the sidebar story for the player who kept shouting out during the speech? And like, we're not going to do this. Why would we do that? I was like, yeah, what is his story? I want to know about that guy. He was very entertaining. He did a great job.
They are not SAO survivors. So we learned that.
That's true. Yeah.
We've had glimpses of it, but it's interesting that essentially there is a prejudice against SAO survivors. They go, you think you're better than us, which is an understandable viewpoint, but it's nice to have both those groups exchange that dialogue.
But also hearing what, because I had known that there was a prejudice against the SAO survivors purely from Asuna's arc with her mother. And hearing about how she was interacting with other people that her mother wanted her to interact with. And she's like, Mom, none of these people know what I've been through. And they can't know what I've been through. And that's a fair point. But I would never have expected it to be such a striking prejudice from other gamers. But mm-hmm. I'm sure that element is there. And just hearing her say... what law enforcement officials thought of them and how it follows them around this prejudice follows them everywhere they go into every aspect of their life. And this virtual world is the only way that they can escape that and just let all of that trauma go, which was really heartbreaking to hear.
And then she gets very open about it and says, we have to go to therapy once a month
and take medication.
Will, because she said, even if we don't want to, and it makes people sick.
Yeah. And I actually I'm really enjoying seeing that vulnerability articulated more in entertainment and especially in the anime video game side of things where people are talking about mental health awareness and like video game addiction, just being very open about like, this is what happens when it is too far and being totally open and vulnerable about it. And I think the more we talk about those things, the less they become something that we should be ashamed of, and we can help each other as a community. Because that's one of the things that I love about being in this community is being somebody that was bullied in high school. It's just like, it's a collection of all the misfits and everybody's welcome here. But even once you get accepted you are kind of nervous to let people know everything about you because you wonder like, well, where is there a line of how much I can be accepted? What is cool and what is not cool? And I like that we're now starting to evolve in entertainment of like, you are unconditionally loved here, share it all. Mm-hmm. And we're going to help each other get through whatever comes our way. And for her to articulate that in such a public forum was really, I mean, it gave me goosebumps getting to see and hear that, which was great.
Well, it's even better because she goes in, essentially tries, is deflated and goes, wait, smiles. And then it says the rest of her speech and you're like, yep. Oh, that yeah. like power surge in her. And like, yep. No, sometimes they can't tell the real between the virtual. But for her, this virtual world and her virtual friends are just as real as anything else.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can experience that now. Like, we're not in person. We're experiencing this essentially virtually, but it's still valid. It's still matters.
I feel like because, and I think that because we're all dealing with social distancing and quarantine, people that are more extroverted are now kind of experiencing what a lot of people that were more introverted would experience before of like, man, I'm feeling when you're an introverted person, sometimes it's a little bit more comforting to be able to play games and interact with all these people while you're still in the comfort of your space, because sometimes going into a huge party with a bunch of people mm-hmm. just feels overwhelming. And I'm more introverted, but I have a lot of friends that my husband is very extroverted, and for them, they understood, but they didn't understand. And now with all the social distancing, they're like, oh my gosh, I need to see people. Like, I need to see people. And and just they're like, it's not the same to be able to communicate with somebody virtually. But then once they jump on, they're like, no, this is the same. I'm getting the same feedback. This makes me feel like I'm connecting with people, and their awareness is expanding of how powerful it really is, which I think made that speech land even more, which is great. But obviously I think we would have totally taken no pandemic, and the speech would have been equally as effective.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah,
it was super heartbreaking and very thought provoking.
Oh yeah. No. Cause you can see the reaction on some of the other characters and them essentially the people from the audience who had been calling out, the hecklers yeah. of essentially going, hey, have you really thought about this? Do you know what we go through? And that's what a real dialogue is, when both sides are explaining like, hey, I experienced this. Oh, I experienced this. And that communication is what bridges it. And I did Absolutely. See a comment. Where'd it go? Mega Daffy said, sadly, even anime fans aren't always accepting of each other. This is true of some fandoms, unfortunately, sure. can be too, you know, whatever words you want to put in there.
Of course.
It's dumb of, we all love this thing. Yeah. You should be excited. Oh, you love it? I love it. Awesome. Great. Yeah. We're in this together. Which is essentially...
It is frustrating because that happens a lot, especially on the internet. If somebody's opinion differs like by a hair, they feel like they have to fight tooth and nail and that any other opinion is wrong, and that's not true. We're all entitled to our opinion and our preference, but not at the expense of hurting someone else who genuinely loves something. I mean, there's space for everyone to be able to enjoy, love, and like live the life that makes them happy. There's space for everyone, as long as you are not like harming someone or endangering your life or someone else's. I don't understand all of the negativity. I've seen it, but that's one of the reasons why I kind of step back from social media from time to time, just because it's crazy to be inundated with that all the time.
Someone mentioned that's like essentially the sub versus dub debate too. Sure. Whatever yeah. you like to watch, great.
Yeah, of course.
There we go. Done.
Totally.
And so that speech is also really about everybody kind of coming together, which I like so much. And with the music playing in the background, the theme song, mwah, chef kiss.
So good. I actually love when there's so much content in an episode like there was last night, where the credits are just slowly rolling up. I mean, it's, you could envision the director and the writer in Japan telling the production team, no, we need every single minute. And they're like, you can't do that. We have to have moments for the credits. No. And they're like, no, you can put the credits on, but we will talk until the last absolute moment. I love when that stuff happens.
I do love those episodes, and they just have the music in there too.
Yep.
The background.
So,
so then the last little bit, the Integrity Knights are ready to go, but the Red Knights, the American players, have shown up. And it's like, dun, dun, dun.
And it was such a cliffhanger, man.
Yeah. And just so that's brutal. Only one more episode for this arc of the season, which is like, wow.
I know.
Yeah, it's crazy. So this has been quite a journey of a show and a season. And what have been some of your favorite moments thus far? I mean, you get a pretty epic entrance. You're essentially a god, sort of.
That was pretty incredible. I did laugh when everyone says, like, are you a goddess? She's like, no, I'm not a goddess. I'm like, sister, you are. Because I think Asuna is fantastic. Yeah, that was a pretty epic entrance. I remember when we were at the anime festival at Anime Expo last year for the Sword Art panel, I had talked to some of the Japanese production team, and I was like, you better promise me that Asuna gets a good entrance. And they said, that's the one thing we can tell you, and we can promise you she's going to get a good entrance. And they did not disappoint. It was a really epic entrance. So that was incredible. I actually really loved I love all of the sweet, tender, subtle moments between her and Kirito. I loved their reunion. I also really enjoyed all of I refer to her as Detective Murder Mystery Asuna, trying to solve all of these problems on the Ocean Turtle. I loved her disguise, which I thought was so random, but it was everything. So that's I've enjoyed all of that. I'm someone who loves to research and learn as much as I can about things. So having Asuna learning so much throughout this whole season has been really, I've really been vibing with, because I love when characters are like, wait, and then this happens, and let's put it all together and we'll articulate. That's very fun. So it's been a really great season as far as that goes. And it's a totally different side of Asuna that we've seen from the other couple of seasons, which is insane to think that this was the first show I worked on when I moved out to LA, and to know who I was then and who I am now, and that she's been a constant presence in my journey as an adult has been really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I loved her first entrance in this season of the, like, the wig and everything.
Yeah.
I was like, yes. Yes.
So good.
Proactive Asuna. Like it. I like her taking charge. Like, I'm going to go take care of my man. And she's because now going to be the knight.
Yeah. 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 It's about time.
Yes, exactly. What has been a favorite line thus far? We only have one more, so it's a little hard to maybe not say anything from the finale, but what's been one of your favorite lines to record thus far in this season?
Favorite line.
Or favorite scene.
Okay. It's a line that I do remember. It was the whole scene with Asuna and the heart monitor. This was like the beginning of the underworld before Kirito went under. And she's like, and now this is my reference. So I hear it every time I go into record, where she talks about the heart rate monitor. And she's like, it's just so comforting to stare at his heart right there all the time. I'm like, whoa, this is a new level. But I loved that scene where he was explaining everything about the flux lights and how the system was working, because I don't think there was any acting involved or any effort to try to stay in the scene. I was learning as Asuna was learning, and it just so happened that our lines matched up almost exactly as she was learning about the floodlights. So it was one of those moments where we were absolutely in sync. And that's happened a couple times throughout the various seasons. But Alex was like, great, that was the pass. We're just going to do that once and we're going to be done. So that anytime that happens is always awesome. And I think we also, in sort of the exposition stuff, for, I think it was 2 episodes ago, that was another one where it all kind of lined up and Alex was like, okay, I guess we're done. He was like, this is the tone we got to set. And we just jumped in here. So those are probably my favorite, when Asuna just gets to go on a roll and I am like locked in, know exactly who she is, and I can just kind of jump in and be an animated character for a little while.
Nice. But you know what, for all the trouble that Kirito gets himself into, I think the heart monitor is very smart, and I would probably want that for my partner. Sure. Too. I Look, need to know I, you're okay.
I feel like I do that for myself. I got a Fitbit to monitor my sleep because I don't have any problems falling asleep. But I would look at my sleep monitor and my Fitbit, and I would go, wait, I was sleeping, but how did I have no, I just got a D in sleep according to this grading system. And then I would see throughout the day, my heart rate would get so elevated because I would be recording a fight scene, or I would be stuck in traffic afraid I'm going to be running late. And apparently if your heart gets too spiked throughout the day, you pay for it with your sleep. So I would not have learned if I didn't have a heart rate monitor for myself. So relatable.
That's very interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Not nice that you went through that, but it's nice that you were able to figure it out.
Yeah. And I learned. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Question for you. What is advice you would have given yourself as a voice actor if you could have told yourself when you were getting started? What's something that you would have told yourself?
Don't try to be perfect, and don't beat yourself up if the take is not working. And don't get in your head if the talk back is turned off too long. It's not because the director and the producer hate you. It's because they're ordering lunch. all that stuff is just additional noise. And that fear that manifests its way into a session is a creativity killer for sure. Mm. So once I realized nobody cares how silly I look or sound when I'm making these like reaction noises. And if somebody comes in and makes a joke or is coming to do a tour at the studio and they don't understand, it's because they're looking at it, imagining if that were them, they would feel insecure. So I must feel insecure, and I don't need to let that noise cloud my perspective of the session. Just stay in the session, do my job, get lost in the character, get lost in the story, and play. Also, I would say go take classes as much as you can of looking to be knowledgeable in being an engineer and learning about microphone equipment and recording software. Never ever would I have thought that I would need to know that information. But the brief time I spent as a disc jockey or on air talent for a radio station running my own board has become very useful, as has interning at my talent agency when I was 19. Has been very useful in this quarantine, because now I'm trying to get equipment and figure out how to pad a studio, a makeshift studio, so that we may be able to record and I may be able to still work from home. And if I did not have that knowledge or did not take advantage of those opportunities, I would be having no information. And I have very, very little, and I wish I had done more. But even that little has been obviously better than nothing.
It's kind of like those situations where having a job adjacent to something you're interested in actually helps feed back into what you're doing.
Well, I think people have said, like, I want to be a voice actor. And I have always said, go take on camera classes, go take host classes, learn how to use a teleprompter, do improv, do stage, go intern at a casting office so you can see what they look for in auditions. You could see what works in auditions, what doesn't work in auditions, how the best actor might not get the job, and you can be in the room for those conversations. And then when you're the actor on the receiving end of not getting the job, you know it's nothing you did. It's just informing all sides of the business. And if you work for a talent agency, you work for a casting office for a brief period of time, you also know what your agent's going through. And if they're not sending you emails or auditions, it's probably not that you're not their favorite. It's probably because there's nothing for you. And just like kind of chilling out and not hounding them can make them way more interested in being your advocate and not being annoyed by the constant emails. So like you said, just informing yourself for the whole industry makes you much better at your particular side.
Nice. And what are some things that people take for granted on voice acting? Like, oh no, it's not like that at all. Or, oh yeah, don't forget that. Or, oh my gosh, it's absolutely like this.
A lot of people have said, yeah, you could just roll up in your pajamas. I have never done that. I think, especially in the last couple of years, it's changed. But my grandmother always told me, you have to show up for your job in the way that you dress and the way that you get yourself ready for the job is going to affect how you perform. So if you just say like, I'm going to roll out of bed and just show up, you're not going to deliver a performance that is somebody that's like, I'm excited, I'm ready, I'm motivated, I want to get out and I want to do this. And then also in the last couple of years, there's been a lot more interest in us being filmed while we're recording because people now want to see the voice behind the studio. And so, of course, if you show up in your pajamas and that just happens to be a day that they want to film you, really? That's not the best.
Yeah.
Because they don't always, actually, they rarely tell us when they're going to do that. So that's tricky. I've had some people say, so I guess when you work at Funimation or Aniplex or any of those studios for a long time, you don't have to audition anymore. They just call you in. I think in my 20 plus years as an actor, I have only not auditioned for 3 roles. When I, even doing plays for my husband, I still audition. And he knows me very well. He just looked at me like, no, you don't. I'm like, yeah, you do. I auditioned for at least, actually I auditioned for one of the shows and I didn't get cast because I wasn't the best person for the job. So you're just because you've been working for a long time and you know these people doesn't mean that you are automatically going to get the job. You still have to be, going to classes. You still have to be working. I don't think there will ever be a time where I'm not taking classes and I'm not trying to grow and elevate my performance because there are actors coming in that are incredible and I have to come to the plate prepared. Otherwise I'm not going to get to work. But yeah, I think one of the things that I take for granted that I realized, and I spoke to a director this weekend, is yes, we're isolated. We're in a padded room by ourselves, but as we're finding out in quarantine, it's nice to be able to just see someone and talk to someone. So I have taken for granted every time that I have had a job. I know we'll often say it's so hard recording all day and then taking a red eye to go to a convention. And then we have so much fun when we're there, but then we have to take another flight back and we land at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And then we've got to be at a session at 9 a.m. and we're up at 5 and that's exhausting. But in times like this, I've always known I wouldn't change it for anything. And I've always been grateful for every convention and every fan. It's always, my mom will go with me or my husband will come with me and any autograph session. I'm like, well, there might not be anyone who shows up, and every person that shows up, I'm super grateful for. But, this experience, this surreal reality that we're living in right now has just reaffirmed how many times I took for granted getting on a plane safely and getting to go in a studio and knowing that the studio was going to Lysol everything and take care of us. And when you have to be made aware of that, you realize how many times you took for granted every job, every audition, every opportunity, every experience with another human being that connected over the work. So I am reminded how grateful I am to be able to do this job. And I think when you stop being grateful, that's when it starts going to other people who will receive it more gratefully. So yeah, that's a very long-winded answer, but those are things
I think it's great. Myself and as well as many people in the chat have chimed in. They're all very grateful for your role of Asana and other roles you've done.
Well, thank you.
And very grateful that you were able to join me today and talk about this awesome show.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
As always, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you, even if digitally.
It's true.
Is there any sign off one? Where can people find you? And is there any are there any projects you have coming up that you can talk about, or is it just a bunch of NDAs?
There's a lot of NDAs. I am on Twitter at @ShareMeLee, on Instagram at @CLKStar, and on Facebook if you search @ShareMeLee. I don't know what the actual link is. I think it's Facebook.com/ShareMeLee, but if you search @ShareMeLee, that will be me. I'm on Netflix with Cells at Work, which is a very fun one. I don't recommend watching the flu episode first because I did that. That was a little rough, but it's such a fun show. I worked on Beastars, which is a newer show. And P5R is out or coming out very, very soon. I feel like I've been living under a rock. I have no idea what's going on. Let's see what other things are not under NDA that I'm allowed to talk about. I think that's all that I can talk about that is not gonna get me in a lot of trouble. But there are some other fun things. Yes.
Yeah. And then they can follow you online for that info.
Again, thank you
everybody for joining us in the live chat. If you're watching this later, please comment down below. Make sure to give the video a thumbs up, click that subscribe button. And again, thank you so much, Jeremy, for joining me.
Thank you.
And my name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D Lane. That's KARIDLANE. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you all next week. See ya.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.